for Health and Clinical Excellence, NICE, the government's health scrutiny body in 2004. NICE. Well, it doesn't sound like it's very nice. It has been gradually adopted nationwide in more than 300 hospitals, 130 hospices, and 560 care homes in England currently use the system.
Wow.
Under the guidelines, the decision to diagnose that a patient is close to death is made by the entire medical team treating them, including a senior doctor. They look for signs that a patient is approaching their final hours, which can include if patients have lost consciousness or whether they're having difficulty swallowing medication. However, doctors warn that these signs can point to other medical problems.
Right.
Right, like diabetic coma or something. It says patients can become semi-conscious and confused as a side effect of pain-killing drugs, such as morphine, if they're also dehydrated, for instance.
Right.
Or if their sugar's too low and they sure. need some orange juice.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. When a decision has been made to place a patient on the pathway, doctors are then recommended to consider removing medication or invasive procedures such as IV drips, which are no longer of benefit. If a patient is judged to still be able to eat or drink food and water, it will still be offered to them, as this is considered nursing care rather than medical intervention. Dr. Hargraves said that this depended, however, on constant assessment of a patient's condition. He added that some patients were being wrongly put on the pathway, which created a self-fulfilling prophecy that they would die.
Of course.
It is supposed to let people die with dignity. We hear that nowadays in the language, death with dignity. But it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Patients who are allowed to become dehydrated and then become confused can be wrongly put on this pathway. He added what they're trying to do is stop people from being overtreated as they are dying. Why is that so important? That is one of the most critical statements of all of it.
Say that again.
They're trying to do is stop people from being overtreated as they are dying. Because the point is,
we don't
want our healthcare system.
Okay.
When you look at how many dollars are spent, how many dollars are spent in the last 6 months of life in general, or the last 2 years of life, when somebody reaches 87 years old. My mother-in-law, who was 84, spent 2 weeks in the ICU. She had a cardiorespiratory arrest. She was put on a ventilator. She was weaned off a ventilator. She got better for a few days. She had another cardiopulmonary arrest, underwent full CPR, another week in the ICU, recovered. Now she's back basically to her pre-disease state. She had a full recovery, and that's about 4 months ago, and she wants to fly to the Philippines in January.
Wow.
So, but this is exactly what the health service does not want. She's a nightmare as far as the health service is concerned.
Because it's going to cost them too much.
Because it costs too much. And she's 84. So why should we spend the money on this old lady? The first time that she had her cardiopulmonary arrest, they say, you know something? We want to avoid over-treating somebody who's dying. So we need to just turn off the
fluids.
They
would have just cut her off.
Cut her off.
And in essence,
because that's what's going to happen as the system becomes bankrupt, which it will. Medicare is bankrupt. Social Security is bankrupt.
Yes.
And now, Obama is using those two as examples in his town hall speech, where he says, everybody said that Medicare was a communist plot, and it's obviously proven that it's not. And everybody said that Social Security was a communist plot, and it's obviously proven that it's not. So he was using those as examples of good things. Well, those are both bankrupt now, further down the line, and Social Security has been robbed by corrupt politicians who took all the money out of Social Security and used it for other things. So he's now using those as examples of why we need this national health care. And as soon as it gets bankrupt, just as London's, I'm sure, is in this economic crisis, now theirs is bankrupt. How do we start saving money? Well, we got to start we got to start pulling the plug on the old people.
Can we resolve the issue by you medical physicians and the oath that you take? Can you determine to help that patient stay alive? That's what medicine used to be. It's an oath that you took. We will do all that we can to keep the patient alive.
Right. Well, that's going to change. That's going to change by your licensing boards. That's going to change by your standards of practice and pay for performance. Those are all the things that are coming down the line.
That because of the new way of doing it.
These are the guidelines that you're going to be funneled into as a physician. And if you're outside those lines, you're outside what we consider competent, and you're labeled incompetent, no longer fit to practice medicine, or you're outside the guidelines of pay for performance. And so if you keep doing this stuff, you're not going to be paid for it because you are outside the line of, you know, everybody else is being treated for X amount of dollars per patient. You're costing the system way too much. Obviously, this is a problem. There's something wrong with you. They'll take you in to dialectic group and peer pressure and try to publicly shame you into changing your behavior. And if changing your income doesn't change your behavior and you can't be changed in your thought process by the small groups, then you're going to be no longer fit to practice medicine.
They're going to cut that doctor off, right, Bob?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know,
this is the way it's headed.
If they don't acquiesce to the new way of doing things, they're going to get cut off.
Man, another example, stupid example, but a good example, is that recently we had to, every single doctor who treats patients, so radiologists and pathologists, because they don't deal with patients, some radiologists do, but every doctor that's a practicing physician, this California state legislature, how many people in the California state legislature are practicing physicians? Zero. There's not a single one in the California state legislature that I'm aware of. So they're non-doctors. They decide we're going to force everybody to have 12 hours of education on pain control and end-of-life care.
They're going to make you do it.
Come on, man. They do the same thing in the educational system. They're going to make you do it. Had to him.
You, and so if you didn't do it by, they gave you about 2 years, and it already passed.
Right.
And you...
Same thing with us.
But we had to have our 12 units, and I listened to my little cassette tapes on my car, and I listened to it. Okay. But these are the legislators who have nothing to do with medical care. They want every doctor to listen to some tape about what you should do for your dying patient. Well, I'm an orthopedic surgeon. Most of my patients aren't dying patients. My patients are people with broken bones and arthritic hips, and they need their bones straightened and their hips fixed. And that's it. And the medical doctors deal with all their medical issues. I fix the bone. So what do I need to know about end-of-life care? Because I'm not going to be in the ICU pulling somebody's plug.
It's going to be revolution in this country. It's going to be revolution in this country because this is not only happening in the medical field.
It's happening everywhere.
It's already happened in the religious field, in the church. Of course they're putting up with it because there's no other option. The people are saying, well, we got to do what we're told to do.
Well, you have to do that or you lose your medical license to practice in California. Absolutely. So you had to do the 12 hours.
Yeah, you have to do the 12 hours. Like, I have to do it when they tell me to write these things. I have to do these things in order to teach philosophy. You have to tell me what you're doing, and this is what we want you to do. We want you to do this, do that, do this, do that. Mm-hmm. So I wrote it up like that.
Right.
I regurgitated it, put my name on it.
And you don't believe it?
I don't believe it at all. Practically none of the people that I work with believe it. Right. They know that it's a sham, but it's something that, and you know what? We all sit there and look at our bosses because we got to eat. And so now, you know, we're trying to, you know, this is going to lead everything into revolution here because there's going to be a group of people that's going to say, like that movie that came out in the 70s, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it any longer.
Network.
You know, you're just not going to do it anymore.
I see it the other way. I see it that the people who try to form the revolution are going to be eliminated because the masses are going with it.
Because they've been pronounced brain dead by their religious leaders and their educational institutions and all of that.
Right.
You're right, Bob. There's such a minority of people that know how to stand up for rights and everything else.
And apparently on 9/11, the president is supposed to equate the people who are protesting the health care as terrorists within our nation.
He is going to do that?
We have a threat within, yeah.
Wow.
I dare him. No, seriously, I dare that idiot to do that. Bob,
don't be surprised.
Man, he better not be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a whole, look. Oh, I'm going to say this. That's right. There's a whole bunch of Americans that's living in these small rural towns, mm-hmm. out in rural, I ain't talking about no big city.
Right.
Because this is a sham here.
Yeah.
This is all just a hoax. Whenever you have a big city and people living in Chicago, New York, and all of that, Dave Wilkerson already had a vision 6 months ago of New York City burning every borough, every house, everything, because the big cities are just going to get whacked. That's not what's running this country. I'm talking about middle Americana. I was talking with a student in the classroom, and we were talking about the jury system. And a student said to me, Mr. Coleman, because I told him I'm not going to perform. I said, they're not going to make me do that. And he said, why should you? He said, when you're sitting on a jury, the people that you sit next to can't even speak the language. Mm-hmm. Not even citizens. They just have an address in your neighborhood. Jury of your peers, mm-hmm. says they don't understand the culture, mm-hmm. and anything else. It is not a jury of your peers. Right. I said it is pure buffoonery, mm-hmm. to sit on a jury to try someone else, and then they're going to threaten you if you don't sit on it.
Yeah.
Whenever I get those things, I don't even respond to them. Mm. I do not. You cannot make me sit on a jury. Mm. You can't do it. I have freedom enough to say, I will not judge my fellow citizen. See, this is how they're going to put all the things together to have you offed. Mm-hmm. They said, John won't deal with this, so off him. Mm-hmm. Man, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of in my life, man, what's happening in this country.
So he says, he continues.
What?
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Ben.
So, again, back on the vein of they're trying to stop people from being overtreated as they're dying. He says it's a very laudable idea, but the concern is that it's tick box medicine that stops people thinking. He said that he had personally taken patients off the pathway who went on to live for significant amounts of time, and warned that many doctors were not checking the progress of patients enough to notice improvement in their condition. Professor Millard said that it was worrying that patients were being terminally sedated. Okay, terminally sedated using syringe drivers which continually empty their contents into their patient over the course of 24 hours. This is Michael Jackson. This is terminal sedation is murder. Because you are deliberately giving more and more medication until the patient stops breathing. That's what happens when you take your dog to the vet to be put down.
Wow.
This is putting down people. In 2007 and 2008, 16.5% of deaths in Britain came about after continuous deep sedation.
Wow.
According to researchers at the Barts and the London School of Medicine and Dentistry, twice as many as in Belgium and the Netherlands. I just recently heard about Belgium, by the way, because I have a patient from Belgium.
Okay.
She said, we fled Belgium. They have that type of health care there.
Wow.
She said, this is how socialized medicine works in Belgium, because 4 years ago, she got a letter from a family member or a friend who is still in Belgium. A man was hit by a car. 84 years old, broke his hip. No ambulance came. They had to load him. The ambulance would not pick him up. They had to load him into a car, and drag him to an emergency room with a broken hip. The emergency room said, "Why are you bringing him here? He's too old. Take him home." They had to put him back into a car, into a taxi. And she said the roads aren't smooth like they're here, but in Belgium.
Every bump was murderous.
Every bump was murderous. This man had no pain medication. He lived in an upper story, so a bunch of neighbors got a sheet and put him on a sheet, and a bunch of neighbors helped to drag him up to his bed, which he laid in pain for about 2 months before he finally died. She said, that's socialized medicine, and that's what's coming here. She says, why are the Americans doing it? She says, the only reason, and she had her daughter there, and she said, you, to her daughter, voted for him.
Right, right.
You voted for this nonsense.
Right.
You don't get it. Americans don't get it. They don't know what they're asking for. This is what we fled Belgium from for our lives to come over here, and now you people are rooting
help
for
us.
It.
Jesus, we are out of our
so
minds.
So that's Belgium and the Netherlands, and according to this article, that's London's worse. London's worse than that. So if they are sedated, it's much harder to see that a patient is getting better. Absolutely, it's harder to see that he's getting better because his breathing is getting shallower. Catherine Murphy, director of the Patients Association, said even the tiniest things that happen towards the end of a patient's life can have a huge and lasting effect on patients and their families' feeling about their care. Guidelines like the LCP can be very helpful, but healthcare professionals always need to keep in mind the individual needs of patients. Right. Human life is sacred. Human life is special. You can't put people into these algorithms and just say, you fit this box, this box, this box, this is your treatment, or this is your lack of treatment. There is no one-size-fits-all approach. I agree. A spokesman for Marie Curie said the letter highlights some complex issues related to the care of the dying. The Liverpool care pathway for